Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I just don't think the army is there that they feel is there.
Even some anti-abortion advocates doubt a constitutional convention will bring a state ban. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 6th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaska's largest electric utility fired its CEO less than a month after hiring him.
They claim that he embellished certain information in his background.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
With the U.S. Supreme Court on the brink of overturning Roe v. Wade, anti-abortion advocates are excited by the prospect that Alaska could enact an abortion ban. Some are calling for a constitutional convention to clear the path in the state's fundamental law. But as Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, even some abortion opponents think that's a bad idea.
Once a decade, the question is put to Alaska voters, should we hold a constitutional convention? The question comes up next on the November ballot. Christian conservative leader Jim Minnery wants Alaskans to vote yes. He's president of the Alaska Family Council.
We're a faith-based public policy organization.
His group has tried again and again to place limits on abortion in Alaska. The Alaska Supreme Court has struck them all down as violations of the state constitution and its right to privacy. Minnery thinks the state's high court is wrong.
Every time a reasonable guardrail has been placed around the issue of abortion to protect unborn lives, the court has said, we have the final say.
So Minnery wants to amend the Constitution.
The language is essentially, this Constitution is silent on the issue of abortion or the funding thereof.
A bill to do that is stuck in the legislature. Two-thirds of lawmakers would have to approve a constitutional amendment to get it on the ballot, and the votes aren't there. So Minnery thinks a constitutional convention is a good alternative. Some of the more radical members of the Right to Life movement, he says, are calling for a constitutional abortion ban.
That's ultimately our goal, but I don't think that that's realistic.
Former Republican state senator and current U.S. House candidate John Coghill is also a Christian conservative, and he's ardently opposed to abortion, too.
I've been an advocate for Right to Life pretty much all my political career, well, actually all my life.
Coghill says he feels the frustration of other abortion opponents, but he doesn't think a convention will produce the results they want.
I just don't think the army is there that they feel is there.
Worse, he says, a constitutional convention puts the entire legal framework of the state in jeopardy. Coghill says there's no way to keep the focus limited to abortion and a few other changes Christian conservatives want.
Pretty soon, coming out of the woodwork is going to be 100 other priorities pressing in. There'll probably be dark money coming from other places. The environmental community internationally would love to see an opportunity to change the way Alaska views its land and land management.
Coghill is one of the leaders of Defend Our Constitution, a multipartisan group urging a no vote on the convention ballot measure. He's worried the call to enshrine the permanent fund dividend in the Constitution could entice Alaskans to say yes to a convention. He thinks that's a bad call, too. Coghill's main concern, though, is that a convention essentially invites the rest of the world to try to impose their vision on the state.
And even though we would be the ones voting, the money and pressure to come in and change what Alaska is
I think could be significant. So that's kind of my worst case scenario.
As for the abortion rights advocates, they see nothing good coming of a convention, especially if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Lindsay Kavanaugh is the executive director of the Alaska Democratic Party.
We need to protect what's in the Constitution. Abortion is protected under Alaska's Constitution. You know, this is not the time to open that up.
Even if voters say yes to a constitutional convention, the process would take years to play out over two more elections. A yes vote in November would likely lead to an election to choose delegates in 2024. After the convention, a new draft constitution would have to go before voters in another statewide election. Minery says he trusts those safeguards. If special interests hijack the convention, he believes Alaska voters will be wise enough to reject what they produce. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The federal government will manage the Yukon River salmon fishery this summer, where the river passes through federal lands. That action follows a decision released today by the Federal Subsistence Board. Only federal subsistence users who live along the river will be allowed to fish for salmon in the federal waters of the Yukon River. The board said it based its decision on record low salmon runs in recent years and the expectation that returns will again be low across all species this year. The Holy Cross Tribe and the native village of Eagle, along with two Yukon River residents, requested federal management of the Yukon River. The State Department of Fish and Game will manage the river where it passes through state land. Alaska's largest electric utility fired its CEO less than a month after he got the job, according to court documents filed in what is now an employment dispute. In March, Chugach Electric Association announced its hiring of Hal Halpern as its new top executive. But by early April, Chugach said its board of directors was, quote, not moving forward with employing Halpern. According to a document Chugach's lawyers filed in federal court Wednesday, the company's board terminated its employment agreement with Halpern for cause. Halpern's lawyer says he plans to sue Chugach for age discrimination, but declined to elaborate on that claim. Halpern is 62, and it would be illegal to deny someone employment because of their age, but his lawyer, Clayton Hallinan, said Chugach gave his client a different reason for the firing.
They claim that he embellished certain information in his background.
And Hallinan says none of those claims are true. The employment agreement lists Halpern's annual salary as $499,000 with a bonus up to about $125,000 a year, along with one-time moving expenses up to $88,000. Halpern would have been moving to Alaska from Minnesota, where he had been the CEO of Cooperative Light and Power for 3 years. Halpern's lawyer says he will be seeking an entire year of separation pay. The lawyer also says Halpern is now out of a job because he had resigned from his previous position to work for Chugach.
He was very much looking forward to coming to Anchorage, and now he has nothing. And at his age, it's unlikely that he's going to be able to find another job as a CEO for another large utility. And it's really a sad, unfortunate story, what they did to him.
Chugach Electric Association's lawyers did not respond to requests for comment, and a spokesperson for the electric utility declined to comment. Chugach employs about 460 people and provides power to more than 90,000 customers in Anchorage and the northern Kenai Peninsula. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, why Juneau's Taco Bell disappeared.
You know, every business, they're going to have drama and rumors and this and that, but to be honest, Taco Bell was a good, wholesome place to work.
Taco Bell, coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree programs with life-friendly, flexible scheduling and course delivery options grounded in real-life experience. Alaska Pacific University offers innovative programming in nursing, counseling, psychology, outdoor and environmental public health, and more. Financial aid is available. Advance your career with APU today. Learn more and apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The National Park Service is searching for a solo climber on Denali after he failed to check in with a friend via satellite phone for several days. The search started Wednesday. According to the Park Service, 35-year-old Matthias Rimmel left his camp at 14,000 feet on Denali's west buttress late last week, intending to summit the mountain and return to camp in one day. Park Service spokesperson Maureen Galtieri says Rimmel was last heard from Saturday afternoon when he called a friend on his satellite phone with about 2,000 feet left to climb.
It sounds like from his friend he had at least a sleeping bag and a stove with him. He had listed other items he intended to take to the summit on his registration sheet, some climbing protection, so like a picket, an ice screw, some rope. It does sound clear that he had not intended to overnight. He did not have a tent, for instance.
Rimmel had been periodically checking in with his friend on his climb. His friend alerted the Park Service on Tuesday after several days passed with no word from Rimmel. Galtieri says temperatures on the upper mountain have been around 25 to 30 below during the day. A Park Service helicopter and mountaineering rangers conducted searches Wednesday and Thursday. Rangers confirmed Thursday that there were no signs Rimmel had returned to his camp at 14,000 feet. Rimmel is reportedly an experienced mountain guide from Austria with search and rescue experience. He is the first registered climber to attempt Denali this season and is alone on the upper part of the mountain, according to the Park Service. Galtieri says searchers are hopeful Rimmel is still alive.
We've had a handful of remarkable survival stories in the Alaska Range, so we're certainly not ruling that out at this point. We are actively searching for him.
Galtieri said that the Park Service planned to continue its search. An 8-person crew of scientists, artists, and divers are trying to locate the site of one of the deadliest shipwrecks in Alaska history. Expedition members say they hope to find the wreck and shine a light on the disparity of the tragic deaths. Most of the passengers who died were Asian cannery workers, and to this day, many of their names are still unknown. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
Alaska artist Ray Troll is standing at Reliance Harbor, watching a gray metal box swing from one of the yellow cranes built into the dock. It's being lowered onto the deck of a 72-foot black and white ship.
Those are oxygen tanks, I believe, for scuba diving.
Troll is part of an 8-person expedition searching for the wreck of the Star of Bengal, an iron-hulled Alaska Packers Association salmon packing ship that went down in a storm in 1908 off the coast of Coronation Island here in southeast Alaska. The group includes a remote sensing specialist, a marine archaeologist, a researcher, an artist and writer, a Wrangell commercial fisherman, and a boat dog named Bella. They're all sailing on the Alaska Endeavor with a U. It's a former U.S. Army boat built in 1956, owned by Patsy Urschel and her husband.
I think of this as a right brain, left brain kind of a project. So it's got the scientific aspects of it, of discovery, but it also has the cultural pieces too.
For expedition captain Bill Urschel, the project stands out from other shipwreck explorations because of the story of the Star of Bengal.
It's not just a ship that went down. It's a social system that went down with it.
All but one of the 111 cannery workers from China, Japan, and the Philippines on board the Star of Bengal died on September 20th, 1908, when the ship sank. 15 of the 36 white crew died.
I think that's where that sense of injustice really kicked in for me.
Tessa Holes is a writer and visual artist and a member of the Endeavor crew looking for the wreck. For the last 5 years, she's been working on a graphic novel exploring three generations of her family, from the communist takeover of Shanghai to the United States. She says that for the white men who died aboard the Star of Bengal, there's plenty of information. Full names, ranks, even insurance payouts to spouses.
And then you try and find any information about any of the Asian passengers, and it's always... and about 100 Orientals, Asiatics, or a word I'm not going to say, you know, it's just, they get so lumped together.
There are conflicting reports about how exactly the Star of Bengal went down in 1908 and what the abandoned ship looked like, but some firsthand accounts tell of the mates and masters of the vessel, all white, leaving the ship without freeing the cannery workers who were locked in the ship's forward hold. In all likelihood, Hulls says the Endeavour crew will never be able to find the names of all of the Asian cannery workers who were killed when the Star of Bengal went down.
But I think telling the story of why we can't find their names is the closest that we're going to get to justice on this.
Already, there's a place set out at the Wrangell Mariners Memorial to honor those who died in the wreck of the Star of Bengal. For Troll, who calls himself a connector and brought much of the eight-person crew together, the mission to find and authenticate the wreck is about respecting the humanity of the victims of the sinking, who have since become victims of history.
I think this is a story about respecting their humanity, and there were certain people that were, their humanity was respected, and others it was total disrespect.
The journey of the Endeavour and its eight-person expedition crew started Friday morning at the old APA cannery site, about where Wrangell's airport now stands. From there, it traces the 82 miles out to Coronation Island, the same route as the Star of Bengal, where they'll spend a week documenting their efforts to find its wreck. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Delta Airlines is bringing back year-round service to Juneau, and its competition with Alaska Airlines is driving airfares down. Delta has not made an official announcement, but confirmed in an email to KTOO Radio, and there's one Delta flight scheduled every day between Juneau and Seattle beginning June 6th and continuing past its typical summer season. Alaska travel writer Scott McMurrin shared the discovery with KTOO on Thursday. He runs the newsletter Alaska Travelgram.
I track these fares to see how low they go, like $200 round trip, and I was looking at October and November, and the Delta flights were still in there. I'm thinking, well, usually they'd make a big play on this.
In recent years, Delta's seasonal service with a Boeing 737 has ended in September. Delta's booking site shows planes will continue after Labor Day with a somewhat smaller, lower-capacity Airbus plane.
The fare to Seattle will stay low. And what it also means is travelers who want to fly internationally to Paris, to Amsterdam, if we ever get to go back to Asia, then they'll have, one carrier to provide that service. It really opens up the world, particularly for off-season travel for those folks in Juneau.
Alaska Airlines has had a unique advantage in Juneau for many years. It uses a technology it developed in the 1990s that lets its planes navigate Juneau's tricky approach and land in weather conditions that other airlines can't. Delta's seasonal service through SkyWest Airlines to Ketchikan and Sitka will also resume on June 6th and end on Labor Day.
I spent a lot of time checking fares, and what's really been interesting is fares are going up all over the country. Three sets of fares were going down, and that was Juneau, Seattle, Ketchikan, Seattle, and Sitka, Seattle, all starting on June 6th when Delta brings in their seasonal service.
Delta's service to Juneau has been on and off over the decades. The last time it tried year-round service was in 2015.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
Alaska's largest school district has updated its policy to allow students to wear items expressive of their cultural heritage and identity during graduation. The policy now allows students within the Anchorage School District to adorn their graduation cap or gown with traditional objects of tribal regalia or recognized objects of cultural significance. The policy change came after some families found the previous policy of seeking approval to wear traditional regalia insulting. That situation led to apologies, a suspension of the rule, and the updated policy. Well, high school graduations began in Anchorage this week. In addition to caps and gowns, many graduates will be wearing leis. But these leis are not made of flowers. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas met with some of the Anchorage residents who make candy leis and has this report.
Maria Manet Marisa grew up in Hawaii. She and her family moved to Alaska in the late 90s. At her high school graduation, her mom walked in carrying leis made out of saran wrap and ribbon with candy inside.
And people are trying to buy them from her. They're like, are you selling those? And she's like, no, these are for my daughter and her friends. And they're like, well, if you sell them, we'll buy them. And she's like, she tells me after graduation, we should sell them.
The rest of the family got on board, and they started selling candy leis in 2001.
My dad cuts the paper. My mom goes and buys the supplies. My little sister and my niece, they fill our buckets with the candy. And my brothers, when we go to graduation, they have to carry all this stuff for us.
Candy leis have been growing more and more popular ever since. Now, they start preparing in March for the influx of orders that come each May. Marisa says they make 75 leis for each high school in corresponding colors. The prices vary depending on the length and type of candy inside. She and her sister Evangeline place a variety of leis on a table in their front yard.
So these are the regular ones that we sell for $20.
Those are made of small candies, like Hershey Kisses and Jolly Ranchers, wrapped in two colors of cellophane. Some customers add dollar bills folded into origami. Marisa holds up an extra long lei with orange and black cellophane, West High's colors.
How much is in this lei? $100? Oh, this is a lei for $200.
And customers aren't just ordering them for graduates. A banner outside their Anchorage home lists other occasions, Mother's Day, Father's Day, and birthdays, when people buy candy leis. That banner caught the attention of Senwari Finn.
I'm getting them for my son. Yeah, he's going to graduate on Monday from Bartlett.
She picked out the lei with blue and gold cellophane.
They're pretty. They're beautiful. I'm not too much into candy, but my son is. I think it's great. So thank you, guys. Girls, ladies. Yes, ma'am.
They also advertise on Facebook Marketplace. That's where Brittany Hoskins sells her leis, too. A few years ago, she started selling balloons filled with toys, money, and confetti as graduation and birthday gifts. Then, her customers started asking if she sold leis.
So, like, it wasn't until the last, like, couple years that there was a real big want for candy leis.
She says every candy lei maker works differently. For example, she likes cellophane more than saran wrap because it's less sticky. She also pays close attention to allergens like latex and peanuts.
These are non-peanut ones, so I keep them in a bag completely separate in my living room.
Hoskins has fulfilled orders from all over the state.
I've had some go to Dead Horse. I've had some go to Bethel. I've had some go to Barrow, and I've had some go to Perryville. And then I've had some be picked up, and I don't know where they go, but I know that they're going on a plane.
A handful of other local lei makers advertise on Facebook. And this year, even Walmart is selling candy leis. Marisa says there's enough of a demand to go around. And she's happy to see Polynesian culture add something new to Alaskan celebrations.
It allows not just us to be able to enjoy our traditions, but it lets other cultures as well. It was our tradition, but that doesn't mean it has to only stay with us.
From Hawaii to Anchorage and Bethel and beyond, candy leis are making graduation a little sweeter. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
In Alaska's cities, like Anchorage, you'll find a lot of the same fast food restaurants that exist in the lower 48. But it's harder for franchises to survive in places like Juneau, which is off the road system. KTOO's Bridget Dowd looked into why Juneau's Taco Bell disappeared about 20 years ago.
In the late 90s, Juneau had two Taco Bells, but by the early 2000s, they were both gone. When I asked the Juneau Community Collective Facebook group for leads on what happened, I got more than 160 comments, ranging from employees were selling drugs to wasn't it hepatitis? Clearly, people have a lot of ideas about what led to the restaurant's demise, but former employee Jennifer Solano says most of them aren't true.
You know, every business, they're going to have drama and rumors and this and that. But to be honest, Taco Bell was a good, wholesome place to work. And they taught me enough that I've been able to raise a family, continuing my career managing fast food restaurants.
Solano runs a Subway in Anchorage now, but she started working for Taco Bell in Juneau as a teenager. In the mid-90s, it sat where the Asiana Garden restaurant is now, across from Super Bear.
We were having repeated problems with our freight coming in with the shipments. We would have to throw away sour cream, cheeses, lettuce, tomatoes. They were coming in continuously frozen when they were only supposed to be refrigerated, and we were having to waste a lot of money.
Solano eventually became an assistant manager. She says getting quality produce from the lower 48 was just one of many problems.
Everything in the building was just kind of crumbling and falling apart. There were so many times that the grease trap had to be redone because the pipes underneath all the flooring were so old and brittle that they were actually collapsing.
Plumbers were called in to try to fix the issue at night, which meant workers the next morning were walking on temporary floorboards.
Because it's not an overnight project. So then we tried to keep staffing at minimal so that nobody was running into each other or getting hurt.
Eventually, it became a cycle. A pipe would be fixed, the flooring would go back in, and another pipe would collapse. Repairs became so expensive that the owners started looking for a new building to move to.
But there was no good place in Juneau at the time, you know, 18, 20 years ago, to put a fast food restaurant with a drive-through in it. So they decided that they were going to cut their losses and just go ahead and close the doors.
Some workers didn't even have advance notice that the restaurant was closing. They showed up the next day to a note on the door and were told to pick up their compensation checks. The Valley location was the last Taco Bell to exist in Juneau, but at one point, the city had two Taco Bells. There was a smaller express restaurant downtown. It shared a space with Subway in a building where Sea Alaska Heritage now sits. Charles McHenry started there in 1987 and worked his way up to general manager.
Taco Bell was doing a competition called the Golden Bell. They had started it, and we managed to take that store to number 7 in the nation for quality and service out of 1,500 franchise stores.
But the downtown restaurant wasn't very profitable. It closed in the summer of 1999 when the corporate office decided to focus its efforts on the Valley location. McHenry was transferred there as a shift manager to try to improve the service.
The gentleman running the store insisted that no one listen to me because it was his store and he would teach them his way, not necessarily the Taco Bell way. Didn't care about quality or service. It was all about his bottom line, even if it meant not being honest about some of the numbers.
Eventually, McHenry quit because of that manager, but he says his experience wasn't all bad.
I loved working in this community. We had great people. It was a fantastic product. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed working for Taco Bell itself, but it can only take so much.
Now, if you're like me and still craving a Crunchwrap Supreme, the nearest Taco Bell is almost 600 miles away in Anchorage. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
And that's all for this hot and spicy edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Kavitha George in Anchorage, Jeremy Shea and Bridget Dowd in Juneau, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer. I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.